Hey, y'all, Uncle Jimmy here. When you speak for yourself, you're forced to think for yourself. And when you think for yourself, the sports world looks different. In order to enjoy this podcast and this show, you need to have the courage to look at the world from alternative points of view and not be offended when you disagree. Speak for yourself isn't your Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram feed. SFY tells you what you need to hear and not what you want to hear. So, welcome aboard, buckle up, and enjoy the ride.
We start today with Luck's decision. Andrew Luck's surprise retirement sparked shock, angst, sadness, bad takes, boos, and rather predictably, vilification of the game that made him rich and famous. The New York Times couldn't resist using Luck to further its exaggerated narrative that football leaves a large portion of its combatants broken. Writing, quote, "The debate over Luck's retirement comes amid a reckoning over the long-term health complications many retired football players face, including brain trauma and suicide." The Times quoted USA Today columnist Dan Wolkin, who wrote, "Do you want to spend several more years putting your body through the brutality of the NFL, or do you want to take the freedom you've earned and do something else that won't put your long-term health at risk?" Knowing what we know now about football, anyone who criticizes a player for choosing the latter comes off like a troglodyte whose grasp of humanity runs no deeper than what to call on 3rd and 3. But it wasn't just the media that came for football. Over the weekend, the key to damaging the brand of any successful business is to convince the people benefiting the most from the business to hate it and to speak against it. Former NFL tight end Martellus Bennett tweeted, "Football doesn't care about players. Players are starting to realize that more and more. The game gets what it needs from you, then moves on. Now that players are getting what they need from the game and moving on, it's effing up the ecosystem." Yeah. After earning millions of dollars and transforming their lives and the lives of their family members, we need more NFL players to F up the ecosystem of the NFL. Let's burn it down in the memory of Andrew Luck. Never mind the fact Andrew Luck doesn't appear to have any interest in burning football to the ground. Luck is a legacy football player. His dad played in the NFL. His dad is the commissioner of the new XFL. Luck seemed genuinely heartbroken Saturday night about leaving the game. From my point of view, Luck's retirement at the age of 29 isn't an indictment of the game or Andrew Luck. It's a statement about how much more fair the NFL has become thanks to the influx of television money. 40 years ago, Luck would have had far more difficult choice to make about retirement. Fran Tarkenton was the highest paid quarterback at around $350,000. O.J. Simpson was the highest paid player at about $800,000. 30 years ago, the 49ers paid Joe Montana $1.3 million. In 7 seasons, Luck earned nearly $100 million. He had the option to retire because the game has been good to him financially. Had he played during his father's era, he would likely continue rehabbing every injury until the moment the Indianapolis Colts decided they no longer wanted him. Luck's retirement is a positive story for football. It illustrates how the rewards of the modern NFL justify the risk, how escalating salaries give the players leverage to make decisions that make sense for them. The average NFL salary is more than $2 million a year. The median NFL salary is around $900,000. What median means is that if you bump into an NFL player, he's probably earning $900,000. You know what that means? If they had the talent, the people vilifying the NFL would probably abandon what they're doing to play pro football. All right, joining the desk now are Fox Sports NFL analyst T.J. Housmanzadeh and the NFL Network's Bucky Brooks. Marcellus, yes. Get us rolling. Does Andrew Luck's retirement say something good or bad about the NFL?
To answer that question explicitly, it's a mixed bag of nuts. It says something good and bad about the NFL. But let me tell you why he retired. And I know this personally from my own experiences, from having 4 surgeries in 3 years in my prime years, and from falling off the cliff in perception to everyone else, realizing internally what was really going on. Andrew Luck retired because he finally realized he could no longer be Andrew Luck. I remember when I came to that realization, but this story is about Andrew Luck. Let's talk about the rehab cycle. Let's talk about climbing up that mountain, and as soon as you get to the top and you're ready, been eating right, getting the proper rest, go out there, doing the right things on the practice field. And because of the fickleness of the game, it knocks you all the way back down to the bottom. But you climb up again because you're Andrew Luck, and you do that again and again. And not only does it rob you of your joy, but it robs you of your own expectations of yourself. This is not a decision that was made for everyone else. He felt that no longer can I go out there and show example who I am in potential. When you lose that, when you realize that you will never have the same fastball, some people want to limp their way all the way to the end zone and get paid in the process and decline. I raise my hand. And some people say, enough's enough. I already got what I wanted out of this game. I understand there's some things I wish I could have accomplished, but they're never going to be realized. And let me move on to other valuable parts of my life.
I hear that and say, thank God the NFL paid him $100 million.
Hell yeah.
In 7 years.
Oh, but the good is you can get in, get out, and get paid. The bad
and do
is.
Do what's best for you.
Hey, I love you. But the bad is if you play football, oh, it hits back. And look, Rob Gronkowski is retired at a young age. Patrick Willis is retired at a young age. Calvin Johnson, not only retired, had to write a check to get up out of there. Barry Sanders, I could go on with the list because football hits back. This is not an indictment on the football. This is a combat sport. You realize what's in that fine print when you sign that contract. That said, this is a great place to be when you can get in, play that short a career, and get that much money.
Yeah, I think more people are realizing how to play the game in terms of we all talk about like raising young people to be aware, to have other interests outside of ball, to use ball as a vehicle to elevate yourself, elevate your family, to put yourself in a position to do things that maybe you wouldn't be able to do if you didn't play the game. Andrew Luck may come from a place of privilege, but Andrew Luck also used football to give himself an opportunity to go to Stanford, to play in the NFL, to walk away with $100 million, to now go pursue other interests. Andrew Luck won. Yeah. Andrew Luck played the game the way that you're supposed to play the game.
Preach.
Enjoy the game. Do everything that you can do within the game. But when it's time to get out with all your faculties and be able to go and do other things.
I don't look at it as good or bad, really. It's a little bit of both. If you watch that press conference, man, that was raw emotion. Like, that, to do that is courageous. At 29 years old and say, I've never been in that situation like Marcellus and a lot of guys. I had one surgery, very minor. But I took plenty of shots. It was times I couldn't walk, I couldn't sleep, you can't cough, you can't laugh. And that financial reward at the end forces you to do that. I mean, every Sunday you take a shot. Monday morning, you can't play with your kids.
Yep.
You can't practice, but you play on that Sunday.
Yeah.
And so when you see him crying in that raw emotion, he had been pushed to the limit. It was like, I really don't want to retire, but I have no choice. My body is telling me to retire. I'm not having fun because all I'm doing is rehabbing. I can't even enjoy the game because of the pain that I'm in. And so for me, I watched it. That takes a lot of courage, man, to get up there and do that at 29. But when you do have $100 million, it makes it a lot easier. Because if he didn't have $100 million,
oh, he's still balling.
He would have rehabbed and were like, I'm going to see what I can do with this rehab, and I'm going to keep going. But when you have that type of nest egg, so to speak, it makes it a lot easier.
And the thing that I never hear from the people that always look for every opportunity to talk about how bad football is, and particularly when it's former players, I never hear any of them say, you know what, I wouldn't have played football if I could do it all over again. And particularly the guys that have made some money and really done some nice things for themselves and their families, I never hear anybody say I wouldn't have done it. So, again, I think there was a time, particularly when there was no information about CTE, brain trauma, whatever, particularly when guys were working other jobs during the offseason. The risk far outweighed the reward. We're starting to see some balance in that, and that's why, again, I look at his retirement at 29. I look at it as a positive story for the NFL. You can get out when you want to get out and still have received a nice financial reward if you're an Andrew Luck or hell, most of the players now.
Yeah, but people don't understand the deep frustration you have when you step on the field and you're not yourself. Think about what TJ was saying, the day-to-day moments that are robbed, not only in your personal life, but in your practice, in your craft. I remember the second surgery I had. I had a back surgery and had to ball out. Contract year, got my 10 and a half sacks, did it for the financial incentive. Next year, got paid. Broke my foot before the first game. Now I'm out there trying to validate this big contract. Didn't practice one day the entire season. Made the Pro Bowl. In my mind, I'm tricked. I'm thinking I could go through anything. I could run through any wall. But you know what I was doing? robbing myself because I wasn't working on my craft and my process because I couldn't practice. Andrew Luck is smart. He's realizing these numbers look great, but guess what's going to happen? Sooner or later, if I'm not out there investing every single day, y'all going to smoke me when I come out here and throw 21 interceptions and only 23 touchdowns. Y'all going to smoke me, and y'all not going to realize I can't hit the gas anymore. So before that moment comes and y'all destroy who I am, my investment in this game and my legacy, tap out. And I understand that frustration. My only regret in my career is that I didn't redshirt. Just one day, you just say, stop, pause, get your body back first. You ain't got your body, you ain't got a chance. Andrew Luck realized that.
Yeah, Andrew Luck realized it, and I think that's why he walked away. I think the one thing that we all have, regardless of the money that comes along with it, there's a level of pride in your play, pride in your performance. And if Andrew Luck talks about, man, I don't have my fastball, and he knows it. He knows when he's on the practice field, the throws that he used to make with ease, if he's struggling to do that, he's having to put more into it. He knows that he's not the same player. And some guys, and I would say it's courageous, some guys would rather walk away than to continue to be a lesser version of themselves. I applaud him if that's how he felt going through the process.
All right, I don't want to address the fans booing. We're going to do that in about an hour. Okay. That's personal with me. I'm a Colts. I'm from Indianapolis.
Oh, you about to say Colts fan. Did
no,
I hear that?
No, I'm a Chiefs
fan. Which fan?
Family. But anyway, I do want to ask you all, as former NFL players, teammates, anybody have a problem with him calling it quits 2 weeks before the season?
I don't have a problem at all. No. Let me tell you this, TJ. If y'all got a problem with Andrew Luck right now doing this, then you don't understand when it hits you, it hits you. This is something that you're contemplating, but you're trying to dismiss. I went through the same process. I wanted to retire. Darren Woodson, Cowboy great, talked me into staying. He was like, man, you got to stay for A, B, and C, brother. Keep going. This is an opportunity of a lifetime. Once it's gone, it's gone. So I don't have a problem with it. But it is funny reading the tea leaves out there that everyone's accepting Andrew Luck's decision as courageous and amazing. But when Vontae Davis did it after the second game at halftime, fry that dude. Fry that dude.
At halftime.
Mess with that. When it hits you, brother.
It don't matter when it hits you.
It don't matter when it hits you. All I say is if y'all accepting Andrew Luck, y'all better give Vontae Davis an apology immediately. And if you can't, then you're a hypocrite.
It's more so, I don't know if you're upset about it. If you're in that building, you've seen what he's gone through. Right. And people ain't even talk. When you're in his situation, the rehab and the pain, how is it affecting his personal life with his wife and his family? Man. I mean, he's probably going home like, leave me alone. I don't want to talk.
Kicking
like,
the dog.
And so that could play a part. It's the teammates, they had to have seen like, I don't think he's going to play this year. Mm. When you're in that locker room and you see him in the training room and you see him trying to throw on the side during practice, once the media leave, I don't think he's going to play this year. So when he retires, you're probably like, wow, 2 weeks before the season? But you had an inkling because you've seen this process of him trying to get back.
I just wondered when he first started contemplating retirement. Was that before the draft? Was that doing OTAs and mini camps? Like, when did he first begin the process of, you know, I don't know if I really want to be out here because
it had to be an inkling when Jacoby Brissett is the backup quarterback and then they start Chad Kelly in a preseason game.
No, we knew that because it's down the line. I just wonder from a team planning standpoint, did he have those conversations like, man, I don't know, because we've seen Ballin and those guys talk about like, hey, he's talked about it a little bit, but you would just like to be able to plan to keep the team because now you don't have an opportunity to really build a team around Jacoby Brissett now that he's your starting quarterback.
I got a guess to that. Look, first of all, let's not talk about this team concept when my medical staff is misdiagnosing or not knowing which way is up. And I'm not blaming those guys because I don't know who's in that room. But I will say this. Without a proper diagnosis, there is no prognosis. How are we going to fix this? It went from my calf to my ankle to my lower leg to my foot. It's a moving injury. And this is not my first time having an issue with you. Kawhi Leonard, paging Kawhi Leonard, anyone. Ooh. This is how it feels. So Kawhi Leonard looked at him with mistrust. He said, I don't know what you guys are doing with my body.
No second opinion, huh?
And then Andrew Luck is sitting there like, y'all saying what? And I fix this, and then you say go here, and then go there. After a while, that whack-a-mole gets tiring, and then he's just stuck.
Here, and correct me if I'm wrong or anyone disagrees, but this is my feeling about football. Every day but game day, once you start playing college football, I think leaving football crosses your mind every day but game day. It's the hardest sport to play. And again, I love the sport.
Right, right.
But the whole preparation cycle, the whole...
Not for me.
The whole authoritarian coaching construct, it was a struggle for me.
You know what, Jason?
It's hard. It was a struggle.
You're really saying a lot there.
Hey, yeah.
It really depends on when you started playing. I started playing football late, my senior year in high school.
Oh, interesting.
And so never had that. It really depends on when you started playing.
Fourth grade for me.
Yeah, and so if you start that early.
Yeah, I started at seven.
I started seven, eight. I think the moment it struck me in the middle of a preseason game. We're about to run out on kickoff, and I just remember having, man, I really don't want to get hurt busting this wedge. And I knew then. It's over. And even though you're trying to be
But where are you going to kick off?
I was like L4.
Oh, so I'm right into the wedge.
I got to go straight into the wedge. And I just remember being like, and literally, it's the Battle of the Bays. The Raiders and the Niners, and I'm on the Raiders. I'm like, man, I really am not trying to
hit that's the locking horns, and you got to split them.
And at that point, it's over. And even though you're trying to hang, and can I just get through this year? Can I just make this cheese for the year, and then I'll be good? I knew. When you're done up here, when you start having those thoughts, it's over.
When you open the door to start to weigh the risks, when you awaken to what's really going on to your body and to your world, that's when you're in the process of retiring. And it happens to a lot. Like you said, every day I went out there, it's like, man, what am I doing? But then you get lost in the sauce and the adrenaline, and I'm like, oh, I'm good at this. But every day there's a question mark.
Game day is great.
Oh, hell yeah.
The rest of the day,
retired. Everything else retired.
Football season is coming up quick, and DraftKings, the leader in one-day fantasy football, is celebrating with huge Week 1 contests. It all starts when Chicago and Green Bay kick off the season with a Thursday night single-game showdown contest and $2.5 million in total prizes up for grabs. New users who sign up today on DraftKings using code SPEAK will receive a free shot at the $1 million top prize. Nothing adds to the excitement of watching the game quite like having a shot at a $1 million payday. Draft your single game showdown lineup and feel the sweat like never before. It's simple. Just draft six players from the season opener, stay under the salary cap, and see how your team stacks up against the competition. But you don't have to wait until week one to get in on the action. Right now, all users can get a deposit bonus up to $500. Download the DraftKings app now to get in on the action. For a limited time, both new and existing users can get a deposit bonus up to $500. And as an extra special week one bonus, new users can put in my code SPEAK to receive a free shot at $1 million with your first deposit. Don't forget the code SPEAK for your free shot at $1 million only at DraftKings. Make it rain. Minimum $5 deposit required. Deposit bonus requires a 25 times playthrough. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details. TJ Houshmandzadeh and Bucky Brooks are back. Time now for a big story. Let's return to Indianapolis, where the Colts are still reeling from Andrew Luck's shocking retirement over the weekend. Indy has invested everything in Luck as the centerpiece of their franchise, and after seven seasons, it sounds like the team still isn't quite ready to let him go, with owner Jim Irsay saying he doesn't rule out the possibility that Luck will return to football. Neither do I. I think he's going to sit for 2 years. I don't think he's returning to Indianapolis, though. I picture him in a Cowboys uniform. But anyway, I don't think he's done playing.
Ooh, Cowboys uniform.
Yeah, that's my prediction on that.
Is that one of the new?
Wow.
Oh, cold blooded. I had to sneak that jab in. I didn't know the Cowboys were in the XFL. Walk with me here. Walk with me here. This is what this dude's going to do. He's going to red shirt, obviously. He's done. Retiring, we calling it now. I call it a red shirt because I've been in that position before. Then you're going to recalibrate the body. And one day, it's going to feel pain-free. You're going to say, whoa. And then you know how it goes. Thanksgiving going to roll around. A little turkey bowl with your uncle and your cousins and them. Yeah, yeah. You're like, wait a minute. And then you're going to say, let me check this birth certificate again. I'm 30? Huh. Dad. Oh, let me call Dad. He's working for the XFL as the commissioner. Hey, Dad, how would it land if I came out there, became one of the starting quarterbacks for the XFL, and helped blow this league up? Not saying he's going to do that, but I think Andrew Luck is going to retire as he did, red shirt, fill out his body, and I think the storyline that he's going to return to may be the XFL to help Pops out, which will be an amazing story. He may come back to the NFL, but I think football is still in his future.
Yeah, I think it's going to be tough for him. I do believe you hit the nail on the head when you talk about when he feels good, when he's healthy again, he doesn't have the pain. I think he's going to miss it. He's going to miss being around it. And heaven help him if he goes to a game in person when he's feeling good and he sees it and he gets the crowd and all that other stuff. Because at the end of the day, we all are egomaniacs. We all are gladiators. We all love walking in the arena and feeling the adulation of the crowd. He is going to miss that part of it. And so we'll see if he can replace it with something else outside of the ball. But typically, the only thing that makes you feel good about it is ball. And I think he's going to find his way back to it.
Yeah, I don't believe he's done playing. The XFL, the NFL won't allow that to happen. He's under contract with the Colts. They would have to release him and okay him. That $25 million, Ursay's not letting him go. So it's NFL or nothing. He's going to miss the NFL. He's going to miss Sundays. If he can get his body healthy in the next 6 to 9 months, and like Marcellus said, I'm 30 years old. I can still get out here and play. Go get with some doctors that are with you day and night to make sure you can get healthy just for quality of life. And then once you realize, like, oh, man, I got out the bed today and I ain't feel no pain. I haven't felt like this in a while. I'm going to start working out a little harder. Oh, let me start taking some drops and throwing a ball. Oh, let me see if I can play. I do believe that time is going to come, and I think we'll see him play again.
I think that part of his calculus, and again, I don't know Andrew Luck from Adam, but he's relatively newly married. I think he's going to get his body right, spend some real quality time with his wife, his new wife, because that's another one of the sacrifices, particularly at the quarterback position, where you're the first in, last out, you're basically an assistant coach. You sacrifice a lot of things relationship-wise that, again, when a kid is Oliver Luck's son, went to Stanford, this kid sees the whole big picture of life. He's not just a football meathead like a lot of us were. And so I think he's going to take 2 years. I don't think it's going to be next year. I think 2 years he's coming back to the NFL, either the Colts or someplace else, wherever the NFL needs him. Because, again, I'm kind of optimistic about what Jacoby Brissett's going to be, so I'm not dead certain that he's just going to walk back into the Colts situation. Again, he super talented. That's not me saying he's got more talent than Jacoby Brissett. But again, I think he's thought this through. And, again, they put out some story, like he started talking about this 10 days ago or whatever. I don't buy that kind of huge decision. I don't think that's a 10-day decision. I think he's put a lot of thought into this and has a game plan in his mind that certainly doesn't close the door to him coming back.
Yeah, I think what you said, combined with what Bucky was saying, there's going to be an inflection point. There's going to be a moment where this arc changes. And it's going to change, at least I foresee this, when he looks at someone in this league at the quarterback position getting enormous amounts of love, and he knows that that dude is less than who he is. At that moment, think about it. When you're sitting at home or you're at that game and you're watching this dude out there get it, and you're like, that's what it is?
That's going to be almost every quarterback in the league.
I'm talking about where he is right now, injured.
But what I think, Marcellus, and this will sound like a joke, but I'm being dead serious. When he finds out that, no, you know what? Football is the thing I'm best at. He's going to, over the next year or two, he's going to go try all these different things.
Is that the thing he's best at? This is a dude who's a member of a book club, very quirky. I do know him and the dad. Intellectual. Like you said, see the big picture. When you see the big picture, you realize football doesn't take you to the top of the mountain. It's a means to an end to get to the top of the mountain. But in our world.
Well, where else can you get that type of competition for competitive people, that type of back and forth and me versus you. You can't get
that
anywhere else.
But where's your value?
The guy's 6'5". He's Oliver Luck's son. He's got one of the greatest stars. He's a tremendous athlete. And he was meant to play football. And I think, again, he's going to go out and do a bunch of other things. And agree. The punchline of this joke, it's like me and gambling. I'm always trying to replace it. But it's in me.
Time out.
Mother and father put it in me. And eventually, I can go on strike from Vegas, but eventually I'm going to creep back out there.
I hear you. I hear you. But Roger Staubach comes to mind. And I know there was a day where everybody told him he was meant to play football. And then that sucker went out there post-football and said, you sure I was meant to play football? And there are many success stories like that, especially starting from where he has started from in mindset and privilege and scope. This dude is like...
Staubach wasn't 29 when he...
No, he wasn't. But guess what? His successes are greater post than they were while he was playing.
I bet you it ain't as fun as playing football, though.
Oh, that's what it's
about. On Sundays.
We love fun.
Right. All right, Darnell, we missed anything? Yeah. I know you a heartbroken Colts fan.
Man. Yeah, man, I was hurt this weekend, man. And it's kind of interesting that you said you think he might come back to the Cowboys. My man Jerry Jones had some comments about Luck post-football career. And it sounds like he has some high aspirations, saying that he hopes Luck becomes president of the U.S. one day. I want to ask you guys, what do you think Andrew would do if he's really done with football?
You know what? I can see him getting into politics.
You can?
Yeah. He's a thoughtful guy that clearly has the courage of his convictions. You willing to stand up in front of everybody? I'm retiring 2 weeks before the season. I could see that. You know, it's not the craziest suggestion in the world.
Yeah, look, his dad ran for Congress and lost in West Virginia, so I don't know if that's something that actually fuels your fire or is negating that because you saw what happened with your father. Look, if he did try to run for any office, I see Peyton Manning right now say, oh, hell no, you ain't stealing my shine again. I'm going to run. This time I'm going to beat you for real. That said, I think this guy is going to return to the simple things, man, the things that are valuable to him, and expressing his view on those things and kind of grow from there.
Look, I think Marcel has talked about his many interests. He talked about book club. He graduated with a degree in architecture. I think he's going to explore those things because that's what you naturally do. Because we all think we want to be something when we're done playing, and maybe it is something that we develop a passion for. I think he will spend at least a year exploring those things before he determines, man, you know, I really miss football, or I really found something that I really like in one of those outside interests away from ball.
If he doesn't come back to football, he's going to be a family man. Whatever he majored in, like you said, in architecture, is very well known that he's an avid book reader. But I just see him being a family man. If he doesn't get back involved in football in some capacity, he'll kind of just take a back seat and be a family man.
Yeah, with his dad being commissioner of XFL, he could maybe run
that
some
takes
team
off,
in XFL.
You never know.
Yep. Ever since the departure of Antonio Brown, Pittsburgh is clearly optimistic that there will be less drama this season, with Big Ben pushing back hard against the idea that Mike Tomlin has lost the locker room, saying, quote, when people speculate things, very rarely is it true. So we all just kind of shook our heads, kind of laughed. It's unbelievable the things people will make up from the outside looking in. All right, I think the Steelers' whole offseason has been about narrowing the chaos to A.B. A.B. was the reason why Mike Tomlin got criticized as a leader. A.B. was the reason why Big Ben's lack of leadership was perhaps exaggerated in their mind. Fair to attribute Tomlin's leadership problems to Antonio Brown.
Oh, we're going to put this all on A.B., huh?
Yeah, I am.
No, we're not.
Nope. One, Tomlin was there first. So whatever was in place in terms of culture, in terms of enforcement, in terms of restrictions, should have been in place to make A.B. fit into that mold, not all of a sudden the mold changes for A.B. in that relationship. Two, this offseason sounds like someone who is really trying to deal with the symptoms and not the illness. And you ever get caught up in that, if you ever go to the doctor and you keep chasing these symptoms, you need to get to the cause first. And I'm not sure.
A.B.
Nah.
He's the eldest, but go ahead.
Okay.
A.B.'s.
Roethlisberger was there before him, too. Everybody there, elder statesmen, but it wasn't on them. It's on the young homie, huh? It is not on the OGs. Okay. And the last thing I want to say about this is I hope that their season is not drama-free. Because part of team building and part of team success is overcoming adversity. And if you look at all the Super Bowl winners that you can see, they've all had to overcome something, whether it's the Patriots and the demise in Foxborough or Carson Wentz gets hurt and what the Eagles going to do. Oh, they're going to win the Super Bowl. You know, you look at these situations, everyone has adversity to deal with. It's not always in scandal, and it can't always be pinned on one player. But with that said, they're going to hit a dry patch. They're going to hit a rough spot. And if they still go on Kumbaya and Fantasy Island out there, maybe they're not mentally ready for that moment.
Look, I think A.B. serves as the example. So, no, all the problems weren't with him, but I think he serves as the shining example as to what was going on in the locker room. When it plays out in real time in Oakland, and then you think about the stuff that they were dealing with in Pittsburgh, it does make you think, man, maybe A.B. was really not all of the blame, but he certainly deserves his share of it. Because when you go back and you look, the guy missed the game. The guy had the Facebook Live post, the series of incidents that have kind of come along with him, it makes it hard to not pinpoint him. Yes, Ben Roethlisberger has not been the model leader. Yes, he doesn't necessarily do it the way that we've seen other quarterbacks do it. But when you see AB go to another locker room and have some of the same issues, it does kind of absolve Mike Tomlin and the Pittsburgh Steelers for the lack of leadership that may have existed in the locker room.
No, not at all. Mm. He's part to blame. AB, he's part of the blame.
He played with Chad. I can't believe you're saying that.
But when you have a head coach that should establish a culture,
yes,
and a set of rules. Now, your best players are going to be allowed to break the rules to a certain degree. But when you step over that line, nah, that's it. You have to enforce it. But this will trip me. You look at what Ben Roethlisberger said about James Washington. He texted me, called me, talked to me in person, thanked me for that when he killed him. The reason James Washington did that because he's James Washington.
Say it.
Now, when he becomes James Washington, mm-hmm, and everybody knows that name,
J-Dub,
you criticize him like that again.
Yeah, I bet.
And see if he does this. He did that because...
So he's going to lose his humility, and that's Ben's fault.
I'm not saying that's Ben's fault. Ben act like it was okay to call James Washington out because he thanked him for it. James Washington is trying to earn his way into the league. He's trying to become a household. He's trying to become a household name.
That was
and
great.
So, again, he's not right.
Look.
That's not how it works.
This is what I'm telling you.
If James Washington comes back at Ben Roethlisberger publicly like AB do, what's going to happen?
Mm-hmm. Let me come holler at you.
Mike Tomlin is going to holler at him.
Come holler at you.
Exactly.
Yeah. But if AB goes at Ben, Mike Tomlin is going to... Y'all need to handle
you
that.
You can't let...
It's different.
You can't have your personality be willy-nilly based on success or failure. You need to be the same guy.
I'm not letting Ben Roethlisberger call me out.
He's your quarterback. He's your leader. Look, I want to go back to Mike Tomlin because I'm just blown away, TJ. You play for Marvin Lewis, man. And to me, I think Marvin Lewis never got his proper respect as one of the best coaches in the NFL. What he did in Cincinnati with Mike Brown and how cheap the Brown family is amazing.
I agree with that.
And he had one big problem at a wide receiver in terms of establishing a culture. He had to deal with
part
Chad.
Part of it. He's part of it.
A big part of it, though.
But it's not.
Why couldn't Chad get on board with this black coach? Why couldn't AB get on board with Mike Tomlin, this black coach? This is what drives me crazy, and we just excuse it. To me, what I'm hearing from Ben, what I'm seeing from Tomlin, they so glad to get
But Ben could have handled this different. Let's go back. You bringing in Chad and Marvin.
Yeah.
Carson handled it so different that they never had those type of problems between Chad and Carson.
Thank you.
Look at the problems between AB and Ben. Because the way Carson handled it was completely different than the way Ben handled it.
And don't act like that.
Ben is wrong.
Yeah, don't act like that blown knee in the playoffs could have changed the entire narrative of what happened in Cincinnati with Carson Palmer. Let's not act like if that playoff game and he doesn't lose his knee, y'all were rolling that year. So who knows what that would have been? The whole narrative changes. But that's football. The thing about this is, we can't forget how it goes. And you know how it goes. When you're a freshman, when you go into the first meeting room and the seniors are in the back, or you're a rookie and the vets are in the back, you don't just unroll your personality day one. You got to, one, earn your keep, earn your way, find your way, and then show your voice. And that's how it goes. And then everybody's saying, you changing. You're like, no, this is the unveiling of who I really am. But in deference and reverence to the situation dynamics, I'm going to slow play this. AB slow play this. Roethlisberger slow play this. Ask Jerome Bettis and them about Roethlisberger day one to now. Not the same. So let's not act like this brand newness is a negative connotation. That's how all rookies come into the league. Then they start to feel themselves.
Darnell, I know you agree with everything I said.
That clapback was strong.
Did you miss anything?
I don't know, Whitlock, but yeah, let's stick in the AFC North, where Browns head coach Freddie Kitchens was asked if he was at all concerned that Baker Mayfield and OBJ have yet to play together in the preseason. Check this out.
Just because he wasn't in team drills doesn't mean they weren't working. You know, it's fairly easy. You know, you learn what to do. You learn where to line up. You learn what to do. You learn the depth and the area you're supposed to be in. And you've got it just about figured out.
Are you guys buying that he's not at all concerned?
Yeah, he's very concerned. He's a first-year head coach. So he has even if things were going well, he's paranoid and nervous because this is his first time. Well, I certainly remember my first time, and I was scared to death.
Man, I'm not telling you. Oh. What you talking about, Witt?
It's around lunchtime, too. You a fool. Look. It's amazing that when you come from humble beginnings, people always trip off when I say, like, I was happy being broke because I didn't know any better. I didn't have any different reality to choose from. So therefore, when I ain't get much, I thought it was everything. This is how he's feeling. He's like, I ain't got no alternative, y'all. These dudes already haven't worked out that much. What do you think? I'm about to think about, whoa, what if they could have? He's living in a reality that has been dealt to him, and he's saying, we're going to be fine. Now, in his ideals, I think he wanted something different, but this is the reality he's living with. He's just going
to
be fine.
Look, man, these guys have thrown the ball enough to know the chemistry and the connection, to understand the body language that's necessary to know when people are coming in and out of their breaks. They've worked together here in L.A. They've done it in many camps and other things where they've had their private workouts. It will be fine. Will it maybe take a game or two to fully get on board? Not enough to really make it a big deal.
He's concerned, but he can't come out and say, I'm concerned. Because then they're going to get concerned. Like, man, do we have enough time with each other?
All right.
If they play well in the game, it won't matter. And if they don't, then, oh, man, we should have had him practice more.
Bucky Brooks is back. We're joined now by The Athletic's Vinny Bonsignore.
Yes.
Let's move to Carly Lloyd, who continues to make waves in the football world. Since her 55-yard field goal during Eagles practice last week, now her trainer says Lloyd just got a call from an NFL team offering to let her kick in a preseason game this week. She has a scheduling conflict with the U.S. Women's National Team, so it's not going to happen. But one NFL player, Keenan Allen, weighed in on the idea today, tweeting, quote, sounds sweet till somebody blocked the kick and all of a sudden she on defense. Would be like the stampede scene in the Lion King movie. She do got a boot, though. The question here is, would Carly Lloyd playing in a preseason game be a good idea?
No, wouldn't be a good idea. Not football as we know it, not the spirit of football, not putting the best players out there in that position. And it's crazy that she literally admits that she needs help with all aspects of kicking. Like her words, except the mental part, which is a huge part. But let's not understate any motor skill position or any motor skill sport. It's about 10,000 hours doing that repetitive motion all the time. So don't tell me baseball player, oh, well, you know, I got great hand eye, I could play hockey. And no hockey player, oh, I got great hand eye with the stick, I could play golf. Y'all better calm down with this. So I'm gonna use her words against her. She says, yeah, I'm good with the mindset, and I know I have to work on my steps and my technique. That's exactly what the damn position is. So if I get an NBA tryout and my words, I say, you know what, mentally I'm ready. All I got to do is working on my dribbling and my shot. I'm good. Y'all better take away my audition that moment. This is unreal because what we're doing is trying to bring an equal playing field to something that's not even equal within the gender of men. It's not. Look, you can discriminate in football. It's called the combine, damn it. How tall are you? How much you weigh? Do this test. Answer this question. I don't like that. Get out of here. And now all of a sudden we're going to try and level that. It's a meritocracy, y'all, and I don't know if she qualifies, if she's never even done it. I don't know where this push is coming from.
Now, you talk about the meritocracy. I think because it's a meritocracy, I would give her an opportunity to kick. Look, I'm at a high school. We have a female kicker. We let CeCe come out. She knocks him through. If she's good enough, she'll be the starting kicker. With Carly Lloyd, I think most coaches think the same thing. If she shows repetitively that she can knock in 40-yard field goals, 50-yard field goals, she will have an opportunity. Now, I'm not saying she could do it today, but maybe in a year or so, if she fully committed to doing it as a practice squad player, absolutely, I think she'd get an opportunity.
What happened to the fine print? Where's the fine print?
What fine print?
The fine print.
What fine print?
Keenan Allen talked about it. Help me, brother. Scar. When you go on defense, when that kick is blocked, when you have to play, are you playing 10 on 11?
No, but look, why would they be blocked? If I'm on my special
every
teams,
kicker gets
I'm on my special teams coach. Let's make sure she's protected. They're not blocked.
Hey, did you watch Miami and Florida this weekend?
I did watch it.
One of the kickers ran a fake field goal.
I did. I did.
Is Carly Lloyd gonna run a fake field goal?
I mean, I don't know how fast is Carly Lloyd. How fast is Carly Lloyd? Can Carly Lloyd get out the way? If Carly Lloyd is fast, I'm gonna give it a rock.
Mm. So what you're saying is that it would be 10 against 11 when she's out there. Not to mention the fact that it would take a year, and that even that wouldn't guarantee it, because what I saw when I look at that video is her taking, what, 5-6 steps to generate the power to kick a 55-yard field goal. She needs to do that in half the time to have any type of success in the NFL. Kicking in the NFL is snap, put the ball down, kick. It's not snap, put the ball down, kick. Mm-hmm. Every time, if she has to do that in half the time, And I don't know if she can to generate the power that's needed to kick it, let alone the accuracy that's involved and the pressure and people
we,
in the stands.
We expect her to come right out the gate and be on the squad.
But they're saying
we're
to,
talking about,
they're talking
they're
about
saying to play her
on
Thursday
game.
Night.
You know, we have a rugby player, Christian Wade, who played.
But he's been in training camp. He's been involved in everything.
But he had never played football before, and we gave him opportunity. Like, we're talking about Carly Lloyd. Look, she goes in the preseason game. Maybe she has an opportunity to kick a PAT and an extra point. But if this is a serious deal, we talk about a year. There's no reason why she can't be able to.
If you give her that year, then I would be okay with that. But not, like, because it's set up to fail, number
one. I'll say this, Bucky. If the standard to get an NFL tryout is one video, one
man,
kick.
We saw Justin Gatlin. We've seen guys come off the streets and run. I mean, like, there are plenty of players who have had opportunities to get sniffs in the league who've never played football before. All these basketball players that are playing tight end, Rico Gaines and the like. Antonio Gates had never played ball before we put him on the field.
Bucky, you're making a good point, and I appreciate it. However, we've seen one kick. Trust me, they edited out the misses because there were misses.
Sure.
No.
Come on, yes.
She's admitted that. They showed the one that she made. And so, Do I think it's a good idea? Actually, I do, because it is a TV show, and people will tune in to watch.
It's week four of the preseason.
Right, and people will tune in. It's a TV show. But this whole little deal, we had this when Michelle Wee was in golf. It was, can she join the PGA Tour? The PGA Tour, I'm sorry. And we had that whole discussion. And back then, it was actually legal for people to have the discussion we just had here, where people could actually say what they really think. Now it's virtually illegal because everybody goes off into la-la land and pretends like that having Carly Lloyd as your kicker puts some restrictions on your special teams. You got to reconfigure your roster based on, she can only kick PATs or extra points or whatever. She can only kick. And then the other thing that comes down to, we're dismissing how hard it is to be a kicker.
Oh, for sure.
Even at the high school, college.
Right.
Because you have to make such a high percentage of the kicks to make it in the NFL. It's not just, she can make one. It's can you do it 98% of the time when it comes to PATs, which are now 33 yards. And then these field goals, you got to be making like a 75, 80% clip. I just don't know if taking 10 steps proves that you can do that.
It doesn't, because like you said, it doesn't respect the elements. One, it doesn't respect that the rush is coming. Two, it doesn't respect the physicality of it. Three, it doesn't respect what the kickers do. And if you've been to an NFL practice or NBA practice, they really don't miss a lot. And then all of a sudden, that light and then that switch goes off and they miss a lot more. So that's one thing, but the curiosity to get her in the game, I feel for that one guy who's that fringe player to be a kicker on a squad, but he's not because there's a curiosity instead of who has really put themselves in position for this opportunity. But my grand point is this. They tell us in football, you have to be 3 years removed from high school or 20. And the reason they say that is because of the physicality. The reason they say is no NFL for you, youngster, who may be physically ready for it and good at that job. Because we have to wait to make sure you're ready for the rigors. But we're not going to now apply that here. And that's just...
She doesn't have to be ready for the rigors.
It just seems like that's a little hypocritical for guys
ready
who have to stay.
How many kickers do we
Bucky.
See making...
I guarantee you in college...
When did we become this kicker?
I guarantee you
and we got all these plans for kickers running
Bucky,
fakes
I guarantee
and doing
you
stuff.
In college, you came off the edge on kick
yes.
on kicks. How many times did you run into a kicker or trample a kicker? And trust me, if you do it to a woman, the reaction is going to be a lot different.
It is going to be different.
Thank
I
you.
Mean, I, the reaction,
the reaction would be different if you don't do it, too.
Yes.
You're not treating
you
them seriously.
Like you said, if you don't do it,
you'll be in.
TJ Houspinzada is back with us. Time now for Darnell's question of the day. Darnell, take it away.
What's up, baby? Yeah, man, let's move to my Colts. We're still trying to figure out a life after Andrew Luck. The team has decided to let the QB keep almost $25 million in bonus money, which gave Yahoo Sports' Charles Robinson an interesting idea, suggesting in his latest column that owner Jim Irsay might want to pay back the money fans spent on season tickets when they still thought Andrew Luck would be playing. I don't know about this, but I want to ask you guys, do the Colts owe their fans anything?
Well, hold on. I'm going to put this ball back in your court.
Yes.
You a Colts fan.
Yes. Right.
Do they owe y'all something?
They don't owe us nothing. At the end of the day, I'm a Colts fan. I'm not just an Andrew Luck fan. So you knew at the beginning of the season that what if Andrew Luck got hurt game one and he's out the rest of the season? Do I owe you money back then? Mm. It's the same result.
Well, I'll say what the Colts fans, and I can't even say, no, Colts fans I don't think are asking this, Charles Robinson, Yahoo is, they feel like they've been misled throughout the offseason about Andrew Luck. Even having said that, I agree with you that you bought Colts tickets, not Luck tickets.
Exactly.
Exactly. I don't buy this whole misled argument just because it's not him getting cut or traded. This is him retiring on the Colts. So how come Jim Irsay and others can't be surprised as well? They act like, oh, I had to know that he was retiring. No, so I don't think it has much premise. It's a good theory. Situations change. Andrew Luck keeps his money. But the fans don't. That's kind of a good theory to try and build it on. But because it caught, I think, everyone by surprise, I'm not with it. I went to a KC and JoJo concert this weekend. Yes, I did. Yes, yes. It was called Jodeci. But there was no KC and JoJo, right? I want my damn money back.
Hold on. Dalvin and Devontae.
Yeah, exactly. So
Keith did Sweat. KC show up?
Hell no.
Oh.
Did JoJo show up? Hell no. Oh. It was called Keith Sweat, Jodeci, and it was no KC and JoJo. Tough. That's an entertainment product. If you ever flip your ticket over and read them little words, guess what they say? That's on you, bro. That's what they say. So, nah, you can't get your money back.
They don't owe the fans anything. You feel for the fans, but it's what you said. It's not Indianapolis coach and Andrew Luck. It's the Indianapolis coach.
Exactly.
And were they misled? Absolutely not. You could see that emotion. I said, he didn't want to retire. He felt like he had no choice. They have a Super Bowl-type team. It hurt him. It hurt the owner. It hurt the fans. This is sports. Get over it. It happens. It is what it is. A refund? Nah. If I consider giving you a refund, you can never get tickets again. You get this refund now, that's it. So if you really want a refund, where you really that much of a fan, okay, we'll refund you. We don't come back now when we start winning. Don't come back.
Well, exactly. A former Colts long snapper, I think his name is Matt Overton, he now plays for the Jaguars. He's actually offered to buy any disgruntled fans' tickets back, and he'll donate the tickets.
Man, they paying long snappers. That's what big money now. Man.
And he said he'll donate them to Raleigh's Children's Hospital, the tickets. Nice. But I'll be honest with you. I got to get to this KC and JoJo deal.
They weren't there. What you mean? I want my money back, too.
I went and saw him in Las Vegas with a bunch of old school, you know, 90s, 80s groups.
Yeah, yeah.
And KC and JoJo were there. But KC was so drunk, he could barely get through the songs. And he sounded horrible.
So I didn't miss anything?
No. I mean, them dudes stay on tilt. That's my favorite group of all time, JoJo.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I mean, them and the Isley Brothers, because I think they're the modern-day Isley Brothers.
Okay.
And when they were in they come from Charlotte. And I worked at the Charlotte Observer, and I wrote a story about them before they became mega stars. Love KC and JoJo, but
when they ain't no way sauce.
Yeah. Particularly KC. Not surprisingly, Clemson and Alabama enter the year ranked number 1 and 2, respectively. And our own Reggie Bush is already predicting a rematch of Dabo Sweeney and Nick Saban's teams in the championship game. If that happens, it would mark the 4th time in 5 years the two teams face off for the title. I've got no problem with this. Actually look forward to it, but we've got our college football expert here. Would another Clemson-Bama national championship game be bad for college football?
I don't know if it'd be bad for college football. I don't think it would be great. I do think that interest would maybe wane a little bit, in particular in that game specifically. But let's be fair. I don't want to take away from greatness. Is the Patriots' domination of the NFL taking away from the NFL? I would say no. Was dynasties tend to be hated from the outside, and yet we all will watch them. You know, so right now you have to understand there's a couple of things at play here, and it's really the structure of college football. If the NFL is built for 8-8, which I think we would all argue it is, right? The way that the draft works, the way that the scheduling works, the way that the salary cap works, everything is really built for 8-8, and you're either going to excel out of that or you're going to fall below it. Well, in college football, we're built for dynasties. The best teams make the most money generally. They can hire the most assistant coaches. They can keep the most assistant coaches. They generally get the best prospects in recruiting. Then they can go out there and make their own schedule. And I would argue that Clemson and Alabama, at least in schedule makeup, have created some of the easier roads for themselves. And let me give you an example of that. Michigan is going to play at one point this season, 7 consecutive weeks against Power 5 teams or Notre Dame. The most consecutive weeks that Clemson or Alabama is going to play against Power 5 opponents is 3. So the schedule makeup is different for these teams playing 8 conference games than other teams playing 9 conference games. So when you put together the nature of college football, the structure of how we do things, we're built for dynasties. This is actually what should happen when you get the right head coach and the support from the administration in your university is that you should be good for a long time. Ooh. So I don't want to diminish the accomplishment of those programs by saying it's bad for college football. Do we need another champion at some point? Probably.
For me, I love it. And this is just David and Goliath reconstructed. And if you think about it, in this situation of college football, David is the field. And Goliath is Clemson and Alabama. You got to look at it through that lens. And it had me watching Miami and Florida this weekend, number 8 Florida, to see when is David going to actually rise up and could beat Goliath, Clemson or Alabama.
It didn't seem like it in that game, did it?
It didn't seem like it in that game, but I will watch this weekend as well, just rooting for that other team. These are moments that we've had in our lives where we loved it. Let's go through our favorite era, at least mine, of basketball in the NBA. It was the 80s and Lakers and Celtics. And we talk about 3 head-to-head matchups. Every game you watched, you knew at the end it was going to be Boston or the Lakers.
Sure.
And we loved it. Ben Johnson versus Carl Lewis. Yeah, I watched the prelims, the semifinals. But damn it, I want to see Carl Lewis race Ben Johnson. That's all it was. I remember a few years ago, everyone disappointed. Man, we never got to see Kobe go against LeBron. Because we like this. When we can go out there as advertised, greatness is going to be exampled on the field, and then we see them collide at the end. I'm all in for it.
And I think, and Joel, help me if I'm wrong here, the production staff, Tua and Trevor Lawrence have a chance to be back-to-back number one picks at the quarterback position.
Yeah, Tua after this year, and then Trevor would have to stay one more year.
Yeah. Yep. And so when have we ever seen the best 2 quarterbacks in all of college football clash for the national championship? The 2 clearly best players in college football potentially could meet at the quarterback position. This would be like, this year in particular, this would be like, nah, you know what? I don't really don't want to see Brady and Manning in their prime play each other in the Super Bowl or in the AFC championship game. I damn sure want to see Tua and Trevor Lawrence clash this year with Tua fully recovered from whatever injuries he had, Trevor Lawrence potentially going to be one of the greatest quarterbacks we've ever seen in college football. This year, more than any other year, I want to see Clemson and Alabama.
I mean, I think maybe for a national championship, off the top of my head, maybe it was Matt Leinart against Vince Young.
Yep, different level, but yes.
Top 10 picks in the same draft, right. So it wasn't back-to-back years like you're talking about, but just that level, right? Yeah. Like great quarterback play facing off against each other. There's certainly that. And remember now, college football is more about the head coach than it is the quarterback. So in the NFL, we talk about your organization is going to go how your quarterback goes. You got to have that guy. Well, in college football, you've got to have the head coach. These 2 guys are the best 2 doing it.
Right.
So even more maybe than Tua Trevor, which I love the point. I think it's a very astute point. You also have those 2 guys on the screen, Dabo against Nick Saban. I love that. You know, I love these juggernauts going up against each other. But to your point, we need somebody else to rise up. Georgia is close. They've had the lead against Bama twice in the last 2 years in the fourth quarter, one in the national championship game, one in the SEC championship game. Maybe Texas is that team with Tom Herman that can potentially rise up and challenge one of these 2 teams. I'm looking for that challenger. I think that would make the sport even better, as if we got another hat into that ring.
Darnell, you got a problem with Bama Clemson?
Not at all. I mean, I want to see the 2 best teams face off. And Clatt, I think the challenger you're looking for might be Ball State. So,
Y'all better beat Columbia first.
You got IU coming up with the Lucasoil Stadium, so stay tuned to that.
Y'all can't beat us.
Listen, I study a lot of college football. I got to be honest, I don't know Ball State's schedule.
All right, guys. But yeah, sticking with college football, the spotlight, you know, was on Jim Harbaugh in Michigan now that Urban Meyer's here with us at Fox, and Harbaugh's rolling the dice, saying he has 2 quarterbacks he likes in Shea Patterson and Dylan McCaffrey, and he intends to play both, adding, quote, all options are open that way. I want to ask you guys, do you think this is a good idea?
No. I don't like it at all.
I love it. Trevor Lawrence, Kelly Bryant last year worked out. You could rethink this decision in four games without losing eligibility. Hey, I like it.
Not only that, but you had Jalen Hurts have to come in for the SEC championship game and bail out an injured Tua to get Bama to the playoff last year. Yeah. So maybe you need two guys. Plus, they're in different veins, right? They're not the same player.
Right.
And so you can run a little bit different style of offense with each guy.
Two quarterbacks mean you don't know what you're doing, and particularly when you're talking about two in different veins and two different lanes. Jim Harbaugh needs to, Shea Patterson's his senior quarterback. Stick with him. Let the guy go as far as he can. Don't have some young kid looking over his shoulder.
This is also the most Jim Harbaugh thing of all time, right? I mean, we don't even get too deep when we're covering his game. I sit with him on Fridays, and I'm like, hey, is this your lineup? And he's like, all options are open. And it's like, hey, man, we're in a broadcast meeting. You know what I mean? So there is some degree. I know that it's news, and we might see Dylan McCaffrey, but it also might just be business as usual with Shea as the starting quarterback.
Whitlock and Wiley, LeVar Arrington is back with us, and we're joined now by former NFL defensive back Stanford Rout. Time now for Darnell's question of the day. Darnell, take it away.
Yeah. Yes, sir. Let's move to Tom Brady, who may have just turned 42, but was voted the most marketable star in the NFL in a new Sports Business Journal survey, just ahead of 23-year-old Patrick Mahomes. But the NFL isn't the only league where old guys are killing it. Forbes magazine says that Michael Jordan is still crushing other NBA players in shoe deal money and is projected to make four times more than the number two guy, LeBron James. So I got to ask you guys, why does Brady and MJ still dominate their sports?
Because their focus is entirely on sports, and that Ooh. Still matters. I think that when it comes to marketing and marketability and things like that, you got to stay away from the polarizing issues, and Jordan and Tom Brady have pretty much done that, and that makes them more marketable.
Man, I can't steal from that, but I can add, I hope. I have a simpler equation. I say it's old money, nostalgia, and the story and folklore of the older players. Think about it. Before there was social media, there were fewer outlets and channels to build your story. So therefore, it was more cemented when you're Michael Jordan. There's no competition to the Michael Jordan story because no one could poke holes in it. Tom Brady also started, got three Super Bowls before social media even existed. Now, what's the average age of the millionaires in our country? 57 years old. What does that mean? Ooh, them old players got some old purchasing power, right? All right. I know it doesn't help in TV ratings to have an old audience, but damn it, it does when you got to go buy something because all the money in this country is old money. There's new money trying to catch up, but they got a long way to go. That's why these guys are winning, because of the bank of their purchasing power of their fan base.
Kids and moms. Do the decision making on that though?
No, it's funny you say that. A lot of kids go to a park right now, they're not wearing Jordans. It's older people, us casually with a suit, trying to impress. Hey, yeah, you can't do it. These kids are wearing J's if they can, but they wearing Steph's, LeBron's, KD's, Kobe's, and it's gonna take forever for them to catch up in part because we keep poking holes in their own marketing story. Oh, you don't believe me? Okay.
I'm out of high school every day, and them feet is, got jumped. They got that. I see them all over. I see them all over.
They are everywhere.
The reason why these guys are able to be so marketable and so brandable is because of the last word I just said. Once your brand transcends anything petty, it will stand the test of time. And with Michael Jordan's brand, Michael Jordan's brand is connected to nostalgia and classic and timeless. He came in a time where it was such an interesting time for the NBA, and Nike put so much behind him, and it took. And once it took, it has not slowed down. It has continued to pick up. Now, with Tom Brady, I feel like it's a little different in the sense that I don't see a product. You know, the product that Michael Jordan's brand has rendered is why he's so, I think, just marketable with Nike, all right? But with Tom Brady, it's probably a whole lot of different things that he's getting money for. Uggs, Under Armour, Time Watches, all kinds of different things. And it's because his brand has transcended being a quarterback and a football player. It's connected to, this is what I want to be. This is who I want to be. This is why I want to be it. And those brands never devalue unless they tarnish it.
Mm.
With MJ, I would go even simpler than that. You got to look at a guy that won 3 titles. That's something that obviously you don't see too much in the NBA. Then takes a year and a half off, goes, gambles, just sits at home, watch TV, does whatever he wants, and then comes back and then wins 3 more titles. Something that obviously we can see in today's day and age. LeBron James wasn't able to do that, and he hasn't even retired of any sort. I think that urban legend is something that's always going to stick out in a lot of people's minds, especially me, of somebody who actually is playing off the wall, above the rim in their first three-peat, then takes a year and a half off, comes back in the second repeat, in the second three-peat, and pretty much reinvents himself, now going to the fall away, being more of a jump shooter, the fadeaway. I think that most guys would come back from that retirement being still a good player, but not an elite level. And somebody going doing that, to me, is something that will always be the urban legend that is Michael Jordan. Going to Tom Brady, I think that if Tom Brady was in high school, he'd be the prom king. You look at him, he wins rings, has 6 of them, has a supermodel for a wife. Mm. He's richer than I don't even know who. Mm-hmm. And when you see somebody that appears to have everything, and he's good looking, I mean, let's just go ahead and call it what it is. When you see something like that, that is something that everybody's going to gravitate behind simply because it looks like he has it made. Now, when you then go and look at Tom Brady's backstory, from everything from high school through college, being a low-round draft pick, and seeing everything he's come from, I think that if you cannot find a way to be a fan of Tom Brady, you're just a hater. Mm.
Mm. Well, let me push back on one part about how you said that these guys are not too political or
polarizing.
Mm-hmm. The funny, I went to the Jordan documentary, which was a few months ago, and it's funny that Jordan and Michael Jordan's shoe actually started off in rebellion when the NBA tried to suppress that he couldn't wear the shoe because of the colors. Mm. And it's amazing that his initial story of this shoe and why it really hit and became an urban legend and why everyone gravitated towards it because of that same rebellion. Like, oh, I will pay the fine. Michael Jordan, Nike paid the fines for this guy to wear it and defy the system. That's in his core ingredients, and it's never got lost, even though Michael Jordan never echoed that himself. Mm. He endorsed something that echoed that, that continues to echo that generations later. So when you add up all of these little elements, it adds up to one story that Michael Jordan actually could play both sides. He got his shoes saying, hey, I got the streets, I got rebellion, but I also got me. I ain't saying nothing. All y'all count.
I'll say this about Jordan and Tom Brady. Jordan's like the coolest dude. I've never met him, but he epitomized. He's Shaft. He's whoever we think is the coolest dude
in
the
world. Yeah, I've met him.
That's who Michael Jordan is.
He's cool as you think he is.
He won.
And, right.
He
and
won.
So I think when you look at it, for black kids, I'm just sorry, everybody wants to be Mike.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, white kids.
They want to be Tom Brady.
Everybody wants to be Tom Brady. Go
ahead, preach. You should say that in the beginning.
Preach.
End of the segment.
I'll take it even one step further. It's just the vanity aspect of it. I don't know how you guys feel, but there is no other athlete that actually has a shoe produced by Nike that even looks to the level of Jordan's. When I see KD's, when I see LeBron James, those shoes, they don't resonate with me. It's not anything that I actually want to go out and purchase, but I think Jordan's have a natural look to them
Now you just got marketed. They just got you as a, first of all, I'm a sociologist. This is what they do in marketing. When you marry a product to success, all of a sudden you say, oh, it's amazing looking. No, it ain't. It's just you married it to success. Yes. So this is the thing. This Jordan shoe could, if he was sorry, if he had no rings, guess what them shoes would look like?
Hey,
trash.
But think about it.
What it is.
The wristband. How many wristbands did a company came up on wristbands?
Yeah.
How many of the knee sleeve that he turned into a calf sleeve, right? Mm-hmm. How many did they sell of those?
Everything.
So it wasn't even just
symbols
the shoe.
Of success.
It was when I went out the hoop, when I walked to school, I wanted to look like Michael Jordan on the court.
I'm going
to
give you another one, though, in terms of I think staying out of the most polarizing issues, because even with Tiger Woods' fall, you go into any golf shop, it's all Tiger Woods.
Damn right.
Tiger Woods is the only thing that sells. Mm-hmm. So if you can stay out of those polarizing issues and just market yourself to everybody, you have the best shot. And again, we didn't go here, but I look at this list, and when I see how close Kevin Durant is to LeBron James, that kind of shakes me up. Mm. Like, why is Kevin Durant this close to LeBron James? Now, because people are upset with Durant.
So far from Mike?
Yeah, but people are upset with Durant from going to Golden State. But other than that, I think people kind of like Kevin Durant.
Yeah, especially. Oh, yeah.
There's nothing polarizing about him.
Yeah.
Bit of a mama's boy, but he's right. Relatable.
Yeah.
I look at this whole list, and we didn't go here, but LeBron's numbers disappointed me, that he's that far from Michael, and Kevin Durant is that close to him.